So for the first time since 1956, which is longer than I've been around, we are celebrating Easter and April Fool's Day. I don't know how many of you, how old you were in 1956. I was negative 10. But for those of you, do you remember celebrating Easter and all you more than 64-year-old people, 62-year-old people? Do you remember celebrating Easter and April Fool's together? It's quite all right. I personally don't like April Fool's. I have been the victim of an elaborate prank in my past. I don't think I can remember a time where I was a perpetrator of one of those elaborate pranks, but perhaps I was. But maybe you have been victimized by a rubber snake in your bed or a caramel onion that you thought was a caramel apple, or worse, mayonnaise in the toothpaste or something. See, I appreciate that most of the people around me are just too lazy to put the effort in to do that sort of thing. Again, I appreciate that. No one wants to be the victim of an April Fool's prank, I don't think. People show all the pranks that they do online. You can get BuzzFeed or Reddit articles, pictures, slideshows that show all sorts of terrible things that people do. No one ever shows, hey, this is what happened to me, and it was awesome, because no one thinks that. April Fool's pranks are mean, and maybe, just maybe, I don't know if they celebrated April Fool's Day, doubtful, since there wasn't an April, but a Jewish month, Fool's Day, in Jesus' time. But it seems to me that maybe Mary Magdalene and Peter and John, while it may not have been April Fool's, might have thought that what was happening to them on the first Easter was a bit of a prank. Someone thought it would be funny to steal the body of Jesus. In verses 1 through 9, John records that Mary went to the tomb, presumably with the other women, in accordance with the Gospels, that there was not just Mary there. Mary is the only one that is addressed in John's Gospel, but that doesn't mean there weren't other women there. And when they get there, the tomb is empty. So she goes back to where Peter and John are staying, and Peter and John go back with her to look. And John gets there first, and he looks in. But Peter, who came up after him, barges right in, recognizes that Jesus' body is gone. The cloth, as the King James says, the napkin that was over his face had just fallen, and the linens that wrapped him were neatly folded. And it says also in verses 1 through 9 that John, at least, and maybe Peter, had some sense of belief, although they didn't understand that Jesus had to rise according to the scriptures. No Jesus, just burial clothes, laid neatly where his body was. And while we know what happened, Mary did not. And that's where we find her, alone, in the tombs. Verse 10. The disciples went back to their homes. But Mary, maybe still with the other women, maybe not, Mary went outside the tomb crying, weeping, sorrowful. And as I think of it, as we look at this passage of scripture, there are three reasons why Mary is crying. She is weeping over a threefold sorrow. First, there is the reality of death. She was there at the cross. She saw him die. She saw him crucified. She saw him pierced. She saw him die. She saw him taken off the cross. It says that the women went with Joseph of Arimathea to the tomb where he was buried. And because it was the Sabbath, they left, not able to finish their work. She was going to the tomb to restore some dignity to Jesus. And as she walked, there is no doubt that the first question that a weeping soul asks was on Mary's mind. What has just happened? Can you imagine going, first of all, to someone you care for, to go to and witness their death? We understand somewhat if we've had ailing parents, an ailing spouse, an ailing child. We understand going to the hospital. We understand going to the nursing home and seeing perhaps someone's final breath. But we cannot fully fathom, I don't think, most of us here, cannot fully fathom watching a loved one executed. Not only watching a loved one executed, but watching a loved one executed in the way that Jesus was executed. For a crime he never committed. And as she walks back to the tomb to provide ointments and spices so that the decay will not be overwhelming, to provide some dignity. Because after all, the Roman guards and the nation of Rome took his humanity and his dignity away. These women are trying to restore some of that. And as she goes, she asks, what has just happened? Then she gets there. And miraculously, the tomb is open. The stone has been rolled away. She goes in and looks, and Jesus' body is gone. The grave is empty. She was looking for some closure, but now she has none of that. She has no place to go. I think sometimes that one of the most wonderful things that we do, and I understand that there are people that disagree, one of the most wonderful things that we do as a culture is we have memorial stones and memorial plaques and places where we can go. And we recognize that the person isn't there. Maybe their remains are there. Or maybe their remains were there. But we recognize that person isn't there. But it's a place where we can go, where we can talk to them. It's a little tiny place that touches upon their presence. And now, that has been desecrated for Mary. She has no place to go. And that's the second question she asks. As she thinks, as she looks into the tomb, where do I go? And then there's the final grief of permanent loss. All hope that she had in Jesus is gone. The one that provided her, as well as everyone else in humanity, forgiveness of sin, is gone. He made promises that when his kingdom came, there would be forgiveness of sin. And now he's dead. And now he's gone. The one that offered her acceptance. And make no mistake, you can watch Jesus Christ Superstar tonight. Part of the story of Mary Magdalene is that she is the woman caught in adultery, which is completely false. And yet, Mary Magdalene was an outcast in society. Every woman in that day and age was an outcast of society, except to Jesus. Jesus was countercultural in welcoming women to hear. It's what he said to Mary, the sister of Lazarus. She's chosen the better thing. It cannot be taken away from her. Jesus was accepting of women, accepting of broken people, male, female, young, old, rich, poor. And now what does she do? It's the third question she asks as she weeps. What do I do now? What has just happened? Where do I go? What do I do now? And some of us have to ask that same question, or have asked those same questions. As tears cross our cheeks, we whisper to ourselves, why? Why has this happened? Why do I have to go through this? Why has my hope been dashed? The world is a hard place. If we get the opportunity to live for any measurable period of time, we face death. 100% guaranteed. And if we live for any length of time, there is sorrow, there is pain, there is difficulty, there is mourning and grief. And we ask ourselves why. The events of Easter have an answer for that. Because in a moment, her weeping has ceased. Our second point, that in just a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, in a heartbeat, her weeping has ceased. She looks back into the tomb in verse 12. And sees two angels. And the angels say to her, woman, why are you crying? It's a tough question to ask in a cemetery. Have you ever been to a cemetery and someone said to you, why are you crying? She gives the obvious answer. They have taken my Lord away. And I don't know where they've put him. And then at this, she turns around and sees a man. We know it to be Jesus, but she does not. And the man says, woman, why are you crying? Who is it you're looking for? And she doesn't look up, thinking it's the gardener. She simply says, sir, if you've carried him away, tell me where you put him so I can get him. And then Jesus says to her, verse 16, Mary. She doesn't recognize what has occurred. She saw and spoke to angels, but that could have been her mind playing tricks on her. It's been a long couple of days. Not only with the Passover, not only with the crucifixion, but the waiting. I'm not sure how much sleep she had gotten. If it were me, I don't know that I would have slept at all. The vivid images racing through my mind, rewinding and replaying over and over again. And it's possible that she didn't realize that they were angels. And maybe she was seeing things, maybe she didn't, you know. Who knows what she thought. In her grief, she only reverts back to what is reasonable and sensible. What her mind could comprehend. The man before me is a gardener. Why else would there be someone here at sunrise? The body is missing. Must be the work of a grave robber. It's what her mind could comprehend. It's what her eyes were telling her. He's gone. And the only reasonable explanation is that someone took him. But then everything changes with one single word. Her fog is lifted by hearing a familiar voice mention her name. Mary. How powerful must that have been? The instant recognition. Breaking through that fog. The sorrow. Suddenly gone. She cries out, "Teacher, Master, Lord." In the midst of our weeping, God speaks to us as well. He calls us by name. He sees our tears. And he brings comfort. And all her questions are answered. Her search is over. Where have they taken him? He's right here. And her eyes are open. She recognizes that he is Jesus. The Son has risen. The Son of God has risen. Just as he had promised. And now Mary's given the task of telling the others. And that's the third point, verses 17 and 18. Jesus removed her darkness and restored her witness. Jesus said to her, "Don't hold on to me, for I have not yet returned to the Father. Go instead to my brothers and tell them, I am returning to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God." Now when Jesus says, "Don't take hold of me, don't touch me, don't hug me," it's not because he was some sort of non-human, ghosty kind of thing, because we know in the 40 days that he spent before returning to the Father, he ate with his disciples, they touched his wounds, they put their hands in his side, he fed them, he did other things, he had a physical body. But it was an odd physical body because it could travel through walls and such like that. But it's still a physical body. I don't think that Jesus is saying, "Don't hold on to me." It's, "Don't keep me here. Don't keep me with you. Don't keep me to yourself. Don't hug me and neglect what needs to be done. I have work to do before I return to the Father, and you need to help me. You need to continue the work. Go instead to my brothers and tell them I am returning to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God." Remember what Mary asked. "What do I do now?" Well, this is what I'm to do now. I'm to go to my brothers and tell them I am going back to the Father. Don't weep over the loss of opportunity. Instead, seize that opportunity when it presents itself. "Don't hold on to me," Jesus says. "I have something else for you to do." And she was given back her hope. Jesus also responds to the question, "What do I do now? Where do I go now?" "Remember my brothers. Remember our Father. Remember our God." Mary wept over separation, but now she's been given a family. The joy of being part of God's family. "Go and tell them of your Father. Tell them of your God. Don't stay here in the cemetery. Don't stay at the tomb. Because I've got a whole group of people that you need to love. What do I do now? Where do I go now? What has just happened? She's given her life back as well, because she has an answer to what has just happened. Because this is what she tells the 11. Mary Magdalene went to the disciples with the news, "I have seen the Lord." And she told them that he had said these things to her. Remember what you have seen. The Lord risen. She wept over his death, but now she is given peace because of his resurrection. And so we do not need to cry, because the tomb is empty. Our sermon in a sentence is this. The empty tomb is not a prank. Death has lost, and we have Christ to thank. I worked really hard at that. I made it even rhyme and then have the proper meter, so it worked. The empty tomb is not a prank. Death has lost, and we have Christ to thank. Mary's grief overwhelmed her when she saw what she thought she knew. A stone was rolled away, an empty tomb, a missing body. And Mary's joy returned when she saw things as they truly were. Christ is alive. The stone was rolled away because death could not hold him. The tomb is empty because Jesus walked out of it. His body is missing because Jesus must return to the Father. The empty tomb is not a prank. Death has lost, and we have Christ to thank. And just like a prank that we've been let in on, Mary's newfound wisdom enables her to tell everyone the truth. And those of us who are here this morning, who know Jesus is alive, have the same wisdom worth sharing with those who are experiencing days of darkness, days of confusion, days of grief. We won't fall for the April Fool's jokes if we are aware of what people are trying to tell us. If we see things as they really are, we won't fall for something that isn't. Much like a magic trick where you are given misdirection. Satan wants us to be misdirected. He wants us to see the empty tomb and assume that it's something, a grave robber. The disciples took him, something. And instead, we ought to see what's there as it really is. That the empty tomb is not a prank, and death has lost it, and we have Christ to thank. Shall we pray?